Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of Less Panic, More Peace. I'm so glad you joined us today because we're going to talk about a story that changed someone's life. It's going to be a very deep conversation, but it's highly necessary one to have. By listening to the story, you're not only educating yourself, but helping people with allergies around you. Today, I have a special guest who goes by the name Thomas Silvera. He's an advocate for food allergies and created this foundation called Elijah Alavi Foundation. If you can please donate, as it's a very good cause, it'd be so helpful. The link to donate will be in the description, but I wanted to just share that with you and let's just really get into the story. So thank you for being a guest on this episode. I introduce to you all the inspiring and strong Thomas Silvera. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. It is definitely a pleasure to share my story with you and also for those who are listening.
Yes, thank you so much. So can you tell the audience a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. My name is Thomas Silvera. I am a New Yorker by heart as well. Just to kind of like give you about my story, back in November 3rd, 2017, my youngest son, Elijah, had passed away due to food allergies. What had happened was he was attending a New York City daycare center, which they given him a food that contained an allergen that caused him to go into an anaphylactic reaction. And he was rushed to the hospital where he didn't make it. He didn't survive. He passed away soon after. So from that moment, that literally had changed my life. It put my wife and I in a group of people and in a group of people that have lost a child. And that's not a group of that anyone wants to be a part of. And with that, we had two choices. One, to either just stay in our grief, which will be understandable, or do something that can create lasting and impactful change. So we chose one that we knew can create change and help save other lives, especially young children. We started the Elijah Alavi Foundation, where a lot of our advocacy and education and awareness has pretty much just began from, and also work on legislations to passing a law in New York State, which was the very first to happen in New York, and continually doing the advocacy across the nation. So it's a lot of work that we're doing. It's not just to keep, that memory of our son, but it's also to protect other young children coming up in the world and those who are actually in childcare today.
It's so inspiring, and it's such a sad story to hear. So he was in a daycare, and he ate something he was allergic to, correct?
Yeah, one of the educators had fed him something that he was allergic to, knowing he had a specific dietary meal separate from the food that was prepared. They failed to have given that, and which created basically this whole entire movement because my son passed away due to the allergic reaction and them knowing that he had a severe allergic reaction, a severe allergy to foods. So they
knew that, and then you found out when?
Well, I found out after the investigations and things that had happened, which I barely can talk based off of litigation issues, but we found out probably a week after everything had happened what actually caused the catalyst of the anaphylaxis, which was unsettling for us. And, that's why we was like, never again, never another child, not just a child, but anyone who suffers with severe food allergies. And on top of that, my son was an asthmatic as well. So it just, it's a very hard, a hard thing to kind of like come by on a daily basis because, it just stings and it's very painful.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. So it all happened very fast. I can tell that it was just boom, boom, boom. And it's so I know a lot of parents after an allergic reaction, they always feel like they should take the blame for everything and they feel regretful and they always do this. Do you feel any regret in any way that you should have done something?
No. It's really not much you can do when something like this happens. My wife and I, we were both at work when we got the call. That's a call that no parent wants to have. And, what the unsettling part is, we have children and we bring our children to these daycare centers or schools because their job as we drop them off at school is to instill the same care as we would as a food allergy parent with our child at their center, especially if it's a place that says they do understand and they do understand like specific disabilities and how to handle those in the event of emergency, whether it's asthma, diabetes, food allergies. We drop our kids off at school because they should instill the same care as we was as a parent, as a food allergy parent, or as an asthma parent, a diabetic parent. It's all full circle, you know? So when that care is lax, not just at a daycare center, at a restaurant or any organization, I don't blame myself for what happened, as many times, we can see this, like maybe if I would have did something, but food allergies is one of the most, prevalent and most serious of illnesses there, which I call it the invisible disease in a sense, because we don't see what happened. We don't know what actually caused it, especially if you're not, if something happens, you actually don't know the actual cause, and it's just mind-boggling at times.
Yeah. So did the daycare workers or did anybody have an EpiPen at hand? They were certified using the EpiPen at all? Was there any sort of education around food allergies at that time?
Due to litigation reasons, I can't extend on a conversation with that. But, you want to make sure you bring your child to a place where, you do your due diligence, make sure that they're up on their education and so forth. Make sure you have your 504 and IEPs ready, your medical documentation, make sure that you have MAT assisted training on hand and so forth. And we did our due diligence. We found the location, we found, a place that, had repeatedly said that, hey, we can do this.
Yeah, that's great. So what is some change that you've created? This foundation is amazing. It's so inspiring. It's truly, I love it. I really am going to ask my parents to donate to this foundation, and it's so helpful for everybody else. So can you explain a little bit about what the foundation is and how you did what you did to help?
So the Elijah Alibi Foundation, of course, we in memory of our son Elijah Alibi, what our foundation does, we focus on 3 points, which is advocacy, education, and equity. And with the advocacy, what we do, we create awareness on a national level, whether it's in legislation or is with individuals to kind of like spread the message on food allergies and asthma awareness. We worked on getting a law passed in New York State. That was a very monumental event for our family and for the food allergy community. We're working on legislations in Illinois, Pennsylvania, California, and several other states. We're looking to take this on a national level. And with the equity is provide equitable resources to everyone, no matter what, whether you're in the most most affluent area to the most underserved community, our resources is provided for everyone. Doesn't matter circumstances, and our job is to make sure we can provide that resources at no charge. We also created a food allergy accredited training, which we go into schools, but due to the pandemic, we actually pivot and we're working on building a web-based platform as well. And then we started an ambassador program where we get to reach out to so many young individuals, from parents with infants, young children with undiagnosed asthma and food allergies, to children up to 12 years of age, to encourage them, to empower them to be an advocate and to be a voice for themselves. Because especially with young children growing up in a world with food allergies, and a lot of people in the community, outside of the community, don't understand it, they can be that voice for themselves or for a friend of theirs who has food allergies and understand the signs and symptoms and create that awareness amongst everyone. And, it is our sole purpose and initiative to keep creating that awareness, not just in New York, but everywhere we go. And we implore everyone to just take that step to make that change for each and everyone who suffered with food allergies and asthma.
Yeah, you took something so scary and made it an opportunity to help people. And that is what people should be doing and be that change in the world. What's this training like in the schools that you did before, obviously pre-COVID? What was that training like? It seems super interesting.
So yeah, the food allergy training was very, it's an in-depth training that we do pre and post exams with the educators there. we do an in-depth training. We want to basically analyze their knowledge before taking our course and see where they are in their understanding of food allergies. And once we get that, we go into the educational curriculum and then give them an in-depth understanding. It's not just how to use an EpiPen. There's so much that goes into understanding it and mitigating any type of risk, from understanding the school settings, from outside the school settings and so forth, then having them take a post-exam to see where their knowledge is based off of the course. And then upon the completion of their exam, you know, which they have to get an 80% or higher, they receive a certification with also continuing education credit on top of that. And the certification is good for 2 years upon that. So, which with that, it helps us empower the educators to understand the signs and symptoms, to know what to do, how to act in if emergency. With our program, we also did hands-on experience, hands-on training. We did emergency situations throughout the school so they can kind of like feel the sense of actually working in that setting. So in the event of that does happen with a child, the immediate response is there without any hesitation. So it empowers the educators to move swiftly and to save a life.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome to hear. I feel like every school system should have people and teachers and administrators should be required not only to use the EpiPen, but to get that feel, as you said, in that setting and in that allergic reaction, because it's more than just taking the EpiPen right away. You know, obviously, no, Epi first, always, but it's more than that. There's this panic, there's this mind control during an allergic reaction, and we don't know whether it's like a panic mode, as my podcast is, Less Panic, More Peace. It's panicky. You're panicked. And there's no way. It's obviously easier said than done. You can't always be in peace mode when you're having an allergic reaction. That's not going to happen. You have to be, I feel like people have to be prepared. And that is one of the greatest things you guys are doing is, you know, you're making other people prepared for an allergic reaction. And it's so helpful. So thank you for that. And I wanted to bring up something I saw on the foundation Instagram. You said every day we're fighting, not because we're angry, but fighting to create change. And I love that. I love that so much. So what is some advice you can give people in general who are dealing with food allergies and they don't know what to do?
That's a good question. With a lot of people who are with the challenges of food allergies and trying to manage it and unfamiliar of what to do, there's so many resources out there, and you want to get your resources from factual sites. You know, I don't knock any of the groups out there that are trying to lend support to each other, but you want to get your information from factual sites like FAIR, AAFA, Asthma and Allergy Network, you know, Kids with Food Allergies. These are organizations that have both from the scientific aspects of it and also from the community aspects of it, in terms of like reaching every area in terms of education, clinical, you name it, they provide that type of information. And that's why our foundation has partnered with each and every one of those organizations, because the information we want to provide, especially when it comes to an educational setting, we want that information to be factual. Factual information is going to give you the right tools to handle and manage your food allergies. And also talk to your primary care physicians or your specialists and your allergists about what's going on and how they can aid in helping you understand your food allergies and what is their need to do in terms of mitigating any risk. So by doing that, that can create that empowerment within them, and they can be an advocate for themselves no matter where they go.
Yes, great advice. I think that education is the number one priority when you're doing anything in general, especially food allergies, and you're dealing with that, you have to be educated. And even if you're traveling around the world, you know, pre-COVID, you're traveling, and it's very hard because you don't know the nearest hospital. You don't have as many EpiPens on you because you're not at home. And so there's always this thing, like, you have to be educated. And I've told this Italy story a bunch of times on my podcast, but my sister had two allergic reactions in Italy with my father. And it was a very scary experience, of course, but we had an allergist back home in New Jersey, and we called him through across the ocean, different time zones and everything. And he was there to help. So it's really, really important to, know your understandings. And we didn't know that. We didn't know where we were. We didn't know the nearest hospital, of course, in Italy, and where we were, there were not many ERs. There's like a doctor smoking in front of the ER. So it was very scary situation. So, yeah, it's really important to be educated about your allergies. When you were, and also new parents, being a new parent, I don't have any experience with that, but being a new parent and having a child with food allergies is also very hard because you don't know exactly what you're doing. So when did you find out both of your children had allergies?
Yeah, so with my first son, it was like several months in, him being born, that when he started rejecting the breast milk from his mother. And he started looking lethargic, and we was trying to figure out what was wrong. We thought it was a gastric issue. We went to a GI doctor. We've seen many specialists. And we thought he had EoE and a couple other things on top of that. And come to find out, he was literally allergic to the mom's breast milk. And although she doesn't consume anything dairy, but for some reason, the proteins from the breast milk, he was not taking it in. So he was having the intestinal reaction, which later on had carried on to having full-blown allergies to dairy. So, we had to eliminate anything that had to do with dairy in our home. And then come to find out, he had other food allergies with peanuts and eggs and shellfish, and he can't ingest beef. So there's a lot of things that, my son had to grow up as a vegan, but luckily my wife, she had lived a plant-based lifestyle growing up. She understood how to provide him with the nutrients, provide him with the proper vitamins and minerals for him to have a healthy growth. And he's 8 years old, and he'll be 9 soon. He's a fun, loving kid and everything. And with Elijah, almost the exact same thing. But on top of that, amongst him, as he got older, we found out he had asthma before he even turned 1. So they labeled it as undiagnosed respiratory disorder, because such at a young age, they don't normally call it asthma, but they treat it just like asthma. Oh. With the nebulizer, the albuterol, the salbutamol, prednisone, if you have it. And then finding out, like, every time we fed him something, he was allergic to it. So it was like, okay, what can we do to figure this out? So we had to take him to a specialist, get allergy tested. And he was allergic to so many different foods, again. So we had to take out a lot of things from, things that we used to eat, from like having onions and corns. And, it was like, these are things that we would normally ingest, but we had to eliminate that. Mm-hmm. And again, he also couldn't ingest any beef or shellfish. So he as well was on a plant-based diet. Still healthy, still eating, still, growing, at the growth rate that he's supposed to for his age, so we've learned a lot at a young age. And me, I also suffer with food allergies and asthma. So knowing that they had that, I was able to understand how to mitigate any of the risk, and in the event of emergency, administer epi if I need to. So, and my wife also has asthma and food allergies as well.
My goodness. So, what allergies do you have, and what allergies does your wife have?
I'm also allergic to non-food specific as well. So I'm allergic to shellfish, almonds, iodine, ibuprofen, aspirin. Yeah, those are my allergies. My wife is allergic to pineapples, raw garlic, and almonds, and she has asthma. Yeah,
as well. My goodness, that's crazy. So
I said, just imagine the bill on the EpiPens.
I know, it's insane. And at a restaurant, yeah. Just sitting there having to label all of the food allergies.
Yeah, so we just learned to just start cooking more at home. And, and if we go somewhere, it's specific to my wife and I's dietary needs. But we would never have our sons eat at a restaurant. We would always bring their food with us. And then we would do all the cleanliness and everything in a restaurant on the table and have them eat while we enjoy the night out. We also make sure that the food are specific, that it doesn't affect them as well.
Oh, yeah. I have a friend who does that as well. He's allergic to like dairy, gluten, every nuts, shellfish, everything you can imagine. And he had a bunch of allergic reactions, but he, you know, he's being really safe with it. And he's older now. He's like about 16 now. And so he used to, back then, he used to have to, you know, get like chicken and rice in a little bowl and just bring it everywhere he goes. And I mean, that's the thing you have to do. But he's getting older now. He kind of speaks up for himself and advocates for himself. And it's just, it's really nice to see a little bit of progress and some hope, you know, that, you know, it's going to be okay. It's not going to be like this all the time. So it's really, really great. And you mentioned that like most of, you know, your family has asthma as well. So for the listeners not knowing like exactly what asthma is and how that correlates with food allergies, can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, a lot of, you know, a lot of, especially children with food allergies, also have asthma as well, and eczema on top of that. Elijah also, let me point that out, Elijah also had eczema as well. Not at the severe, but he did have a very mild case of eczema. So all that is just like the trifecta of so much, you know, and you have to mitigate so much in those type of situations. Yeah. So with asthma, especially when it comes to allergies, they can almost somewhat mimic each other in a sense. You know, having an allergic reaction, the respiratory system can be affected by it. So, and if you have ingested something or if you've been somewhere, then your asthma starts to kind of like affect you, and you have that exacerbation. Then you have that, you're thinking and trying to like do the investigation in your head. Did I eat something that caused me to have this? Should I use my epinephrine? Should I use my my inhaler and so forth? So there's a lot that can kind of like mimic each other. So you always want to be mindful of that when you're having either an asthma exacerbation or if you think it's an allergic reaction at the same time. You have to do that mental investigation. And I know the fear and anxiety sets in with the impending doom, but those are the things that I've been through myself as a young man, and eating something, and then immediately my asthma will act up, and I'm like, did I eat something that wasn't supposed to? Or it could have been something that triggered my asthma in the food that, you know, that I have to use my inhaler. So it can be cumbersome at some point when you're trying to manage both asthma and food allergies, but it's a way of life now, you know, until we actually find a cure for both, you know, we have to continue with the mitigation.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I hope there's a cure. This is insane. So how do you, this is crazy. You know, you have asthma, you have on top of this. It's really a crazy experience, and people should be able to hear this and hear your stories, because without hearing these stories, they're not going to know that this is happening to people, and there's not going to be much advocacy. So I want to know, kind of moving to the panic, from panic to peace, how do you kind of cope with all of this, and how do you remain peaceful for parents dealing with this as well?
You know, for me, I'm like, whether you're religious, you're spiritual, or you're secular, like I use a lot of my faith to kind of like keep that stillness within me, to keep that panic at bay, so I don't try to bring that up. So when, in the event of an emergency situation happens with myself or with anyone else in my family, I know how to manage that in a more calm demeanor without kind of like going that route of panicking. So I will create that peace to make sure I can handle the situation without kind of like freaking out in a sense, in order to help aid in any type of emergency, especially with myself. I deal with anxiety on a regular. So sometimes when I have my anxiety, I'm thinking, oh my God, because you have the heavy labor breathing, you have the sweating and everything. It's like, is this a reaction? But if I know myself too well, and I know the foods that I ingest, and I'm always constantly reading labels no matter what. So it's like, I know the foods that I've ingested. So I'm like, this may be my anxiety just playing that mental trick on me. So I use a lot of my inner peace and relaxation to kind of like help aid with my peace, so I won't go into that panic mode.
Yeah, exactly. 100% agree. I am a very paranoid person when it comes to food allergies and have an allergic reaction. I had Thai food one time, and I just went into full panic mode, and it's really just kind of disregarding my whole podcast that I have. I just went into panic mode, and I was not practicing what I was preaching at all. And so it was a really difficult situation, but I think what really helped me was a support system, having my parents there with me, kind of going through the whole thing. And it's a mindset. It really is. I feel like moving to panic and to peace mode, it's totally a mindset. And you have to just, I've talked to a Yale professor about this on my podcast, and he said that Yoga and meditation is also very helpful when just kind of, you know, cleansing your whole mind, your whole body. And what really helps me is like working out and kind of going on a run. It really clears your mind when kind of moving from a panic to peace, because most of the time, panic isn't only an allergic reaction, but it's in everyday life, you know, as you said, like anxiety is in everyday life. So you have to kind of cope with that. And it's really hard to, but I think if you practice it, it will get better and easier each time. So yeah, it was really important that you shared that. Thank you so much. And I want to kind of, you spoke about the labels a little bit. I want to speak about the labels because I think it's really important. There's all these like may contain labels. Oh, we don't know if this is. And I've spoken to many parents who say, oh, I have to call the manufacturers and see if it has any of my child's allergy. So what do you do when in that situation? Do you call them? Do you agree with these labels? What about that?
It's challenging. And I'll bring up a story with, if I'm not sure if you've been paying attention. So Hillary told Carter, she's, you know, she has take action with FAIR and everything. You know, just recently she posted, actually a few weeks ago, she had posted about a food that her son had ingested. A son is supposed to be away from gluten. He's allergic to gluten and everything. And that product said it did not contain gluten, but her son had an anaphylactic reaction and was administered multiple epinephrine, was taken to the hospital and in emergency. Thank goodness he had survived. But these are the things, even with reading labels, that, and if you even call the manufacturer and they tell you that these specific things are not in there, that little micron or whatever it is that was inside that food had caused that catalyst of the anaphylaxis could be scary, because now you have to not just double check, triple and quadruple check what you're actually ingesting. And even though the label says, you know, may contain X, Y, and Z, or it made in a facility that doesn't have peanuts, tree nuts, X, Y, and Z, you still have to do your due diligence. And it's a lot of work. It's almost like research and educating yourself on a daily basis. And even if it's the same foods that you constantly purchase, you have to continually still read the labels and still do your research on it. Because a simple change in packaging can also mean a simple change in ingredients that I think some people are not familiar with. You know, there was like, you know, new design, but okay, there may be a new design, but it could be new ingredients inside this package. And that's one thing that we want to just pay attention to. Excuse me. Yeah, it can be cumbersome at some times, but reading label that says may contain or made in a facility or allergen free, we have to be mindful and do that research as well. Other people think that we're going overboard, but it's a way to keep ourselves safe and our children safe. So we don't want a tragic incident or an allergic reaction to happen by a product that we trusted. You know, especially if it's a food product in the food allergy community, we want to continue trusting these products. And I think Hillary, she did such a great thing with her investigation, and they found there was gluten inside that so specific non-gluten food. So just imagine that. That's a very scary event. You know, and the company was very good about responding back and working with her. Now they're working with FAIR to create that type of awareness. And, you know, and I think parents or anyone hearing this, just do your due diligence, do your homework. Don't worry about what other people say, because, you know, even during the pandemic with the FDA guidelines, with them relaxing like food allergy labelings with these big companies, you know, and that was very scary for the food allergy community. You know, and that's why my foundation and other foundations like FAIR, AFFA, we all got together and we put our voice we voiced our opinions to the FDA to see if they can kind of have some type of leniency towards the food allergy community. But it's such a hard feat, you know, when it comes to dealing with a big organization like the FDA and dealing with manufacturers and companies, because on those labeling packages, you know, there's a type of a real estate that's back there that these companies can only allocate so much on. So, you know, and them laxing specific guidelines for them to outsource products or get any products or substitute thing, it's just scary, you know, all together. You know, hopefully we can come to a census down the line that, you know, the FDA and government will see that how serious that food allergies are in a community. It's a life-threatening thing that it affects so many people, not just here in the U.S., but globally.
I'm just wondering, like, how can we change that? You know, I know it's really hard because they're such a big companies. Do we have to go to each specific manufacturing people? Like, do we have to do all that? I don't know how to change. How do you think that we can change this? Because
it's a system. It's a big system, especially when it comes to dealing with, dealing with big organizations like the FDA, dealing with manufacturing and retail companies that specifically manufacture foods. That's a big fight. And the only way that we can get some change is for everyone in that food allergy community. We're talking about how many, 56 million people we've suffered with food allergies. Get them all on board, not just here in the US, but globally. The numbers will be astronomical for everyone to stand on that soapbox and create that platform for change and make their voices heard in that type of space. You know, because it, like I said, it shouldn't take tragedy to create change. You know, that shouldn't happen for anything. There should be a guidance that we see that, okay, there's a situation that we really need to pay attention to and take care of right away in order to mitigate any type of liability or risk or death in the future. You know, it's just a matter of like who is actually going to be listening. And it shouldn't be more death to come from it because, you know, you decided to lax, to take a lax in on some type of guidelines.
Yeah. What you said took me back to what happened in 2020 and all these riots and all these crazy things that happened and protests about the Black Lives Matter. And it shouldn't take, as you said, it shouldn't take death or a tragedy to raise change, because this is happening all along. You know, it wasn't just that one death. Oh yeah, that it would just began a whole system of racism. It's not that. It's a whole, you know, there's years and years and years of this going on. And you know, you have to stand up and create change, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. So yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I just wanted to kind of take a step back and talk about your son Sebastian, right? So he's 9 right now, right?
Yeah, I would have had him on, but he's with he has like OT and PT and speech, so he's working with them. So usually I was like, oh no, I won't be able to have him on at that time. But
yeah. No problem. So yeah, we could just talk about him. So he has, what allergies does he have?
He's allergic to eggs, dairy, peanut, shellfish. He cannot ingest beef. So yeah, those are his allergies that he's very familiar with, he's very aware of. We taught him at a very young age on how to use his auto injector. And we still train him, you know, from time to time. So sometimes kids can be like, yeah, I know how to do it. Then like a month later, they totally will forget. So we teach him that. We teach him, you know, what he needs to do. If someone was to offer him food, how to respond to that. You know, put your hand out, like, sorry, you know, no, thank you. I only accept food from my mom and my dad. Very simple, very basic. So we train them. We also train them in scenario type situations as well. For me, you know, if I have an allergic reaction, what he needs to do in the event of emergency, it's almost like our preparedness program for our home.
Oh my God, that's so awesome. So can you tell the parents so they can, if they have young children, they can use the same tactics. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, and I've also worked with my niece as well. So when she's over here, we will do role play and she will, like Sebastian will pretend he's having an allergic reaction, how she will act in response. Basically, it's creating a preparedness program the same way as you would if you live in a home and you want to teach your children about fire safety. So just look at this as fire safety, but for anaphylaxis safety. You know, we take that, we teach our children the what to do in the event of emergency. We put up those signs, how to administer auto injector. The same way we put up a fire sign, like what to do, wrap yourself in a blanket, stop, wrap and roll, take your fire lighter, put it out the window. These are the steps that you will take. And role playing plays a big role with, especially when it comes to memory. When you're working hands-on experience, you have that memory and that retention where in the event if a situation was to happen, they immediately can call 911. They can immediately call, you know, whoever they need to and also administer epinephrine. Even if they're 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10, they know what to do in the event of emergency. So having my son role play with me and me showing him what I'm doing with him, the event of emergency, so he doesn't panic. So it kind of like helps him to be calm in the event of him having an allergic reaction. And the same thing with me, I pretend I'm having an allergic reaction or even with my asthma, he knows where to get my inhaler. I usually have two inhalers in the house. One I keep on me if I don't have it, there's one specific location where I keep another one in the event of emergency. Where his EpiPen is, where everything is at, so he can act accordingly and know what to do, take the cell phone or the house phone and call 911 and give them the proper information and be and always stay by me if, you know, if I need any help or assistance. So yeah, he's yeah.
Yeah, that's a great tactic you can give. Every parent will be, it's so beneficial to know that. And, you know, the scenarios, playing out the scenarios are very, very important. And I'm going to actually, I have a younger brother. I'm going to tell him to do that now. I'm going to actually tell him to act out these scenarios because it's so necessary, especially how, you know, we're going to actually have to go out to restaurants now. And, you know, a lot of parents and take their children to restaurants and after COVID, and it's going to be hard, but I think it's a very necessary and amazing tactic that you provided to everyone. So that's great. So does Sebastian suffer from like self-confidence or like feeling like an outsider at all? Because I know that a lot of parents spoke about their children are dealing with these kind of stuff, bullying and everything like that. So does he have that yet?
You know, with Sebastian, we've been teaching him at a young age, and I don't think he has that self-confidence. You know, he has that, you know, and I'm not saying like, you know, one, I tell you this because we've actually been homeschooling him since he was in first grade.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So because of, you know, after everything that happened with my son, Elijah, when Sebastian was in school, one of the educators there had eaten something in the class and he touched it and it contained peanuts. He immediately had to get epinephrine and taken to the emergency. But thank goodness he had a health para with him that carried his auto injector. She was able to help him get him to the hospital. We were able to go to the hospital. He was fine, thank goodness. But from that set our anxiety on like high. So we just pulled him out of school. My wife is a special education teacher anyway, so she's very familiar with how to teach and everything. So we just decided to teach him at home. So he's been homeschooled since the first grade. But in a setting with children, he's very confident. He knows like how to advocate and be a voice for himself. So we see that he still has that confidence. He hasn't lost that, or he doesn't feel excluded out of any events. So if he does go to a party, we tell him where he should be going, who should he play with, and if there's anything that has to do with in that place that has anything containing his allergen, what he needs to do in terms of mitigating any of that for him affecting him. And he doesn't take food from anybody, like anybody. He can go to my mom's house, and she knows, like, she takes care of, like, make sure he has all the food, and she can provide him the same food that we give him. And he was like, what is in there? Does it have this, this, and this, and this, and that? She was like, this is the same food. I said, no. I was like, Mom, let him ask you those questions. You know, I want you to continue saying that. So it becomes repetitive and it just becomes like his language.
Yeah, it's perfect. That's great. He seems so awesome, honestly. So he seems very aware of, you know, his allergies and what he has to do with all of them. So does he kind of talk openly about the subject of his brother and like anything like that?
Yeah, it's a very touchy thing with him. He has his moments, you know, still to this day that he will just, you know, he would just cry, you know, and I always ask like, what's the matter? He was like, I miss my brother. You know, I miss my brother, you know, he's my best friend, you know, and they were the dynamic duo, these two. Like, it was funny. Sebastian was the oldest, but you would think Elijah was the oldest, even though he was younger. Elijah had this energy about him that he was always protective of Sebastian, which was amazing. But he always talks about his brother a lot. You know, it's emotional, you know, because, you know, then I get emotional because he's emotional. And, you know, we still have pictures around of Elijah. You know, we constantly, you know, we want him to know who his brother was because he didn't get to see his brother. All he knows is his brother went to school that day and he didn't get to see his brother when he came home. You know, it was like, where is he? You know, and it's that hard conversation to have, you know, when it comes to the loss, you know, and having that with him and him to understanding what grief is and the loss of someone, you know. Like, I talk about it and I get emotional because, you know, it affects him, you know, and like he sees a therapist, you know, like we all seek therapy, especially for grief counseling, because no matter how long it is, it's going to take a while to, you know, to overcome something like that. You know, I don't say it gets, you know, grief is just going to go away. It never does. You know, we're just hoping that in our grief, we can have, you know, what my wife said is it's a good morning, you know, a good way to experience the loss, you know. So, you know, it's, he has those challenges, but we make sure that we take care of him. I mean, and keep him safe and comfortable and understanding that it's okay to miss your brother.
Yeah, that's a great way to deal with that situation. It's so emotional. I know it must be really, really hard for you guys to kind of also do this foundation and kind of do these podcasts and actually talk openly about it. And I'm going to cry. This is, oh my goodness, it's so sad. But I'm so glad that you shared this. And I hope everybody listens to this podcast and really, really takes something from it. So to kind of end there, like, what is some takeaway and hope you can give for the future? Because the foundation you're doing is so amazing. I know I've been saying this a bunch of times throughout the whole podcast, but it truly is so inspiring to everybody, especially me. So what is some hope that you can see in the future?
The hope that I can see for the future is more awareness and more change. You know, we know there's no known cure for food allergies. You know, the only way we can kind of like help with that is mitigating risks, educating the masses of people who don't know the signs and symptoms of food allergies. It's to hit a population that has been untouched, which is a population that doesn't understand food allergies. We in the food allergy community, we understand that. We know how to mitigate. We know how to do everything. We're basically, you know, we are the resource guide to understanding food allergies. But when you touch on an untapped population of people that don't know or don't understand, those are the people we need to connect with. And the hope is to get that message out to them, which creates a bigger platform outside of the food allergy and asthma community. And also, you know, hopefully with advance in medical research when it comes to food allergy, we have a lot of things that does a lot of that does desensitization when it comes to having certain specific allergens like peanuts or so forth. You know, we need to hopefully create where there's a broader range where we can desensitize a lot more allergens, where more people are able to consume not, you know, dairy and peanuts and everything. You know, I know OIT is like one of the things that help with that. But hopefully the advancement in medical research and so forth, that there will be something different. New ways of, you know, utilizing epinephrine opposed to using it in, you know, when you're out of diet. You know, so I'm just hopeful for what can come. But I know the only thing I can leave is with everyone. It's like, continue advocating, be vigilant, and be hopeful for a change and for a cure.
That's awesome. Great advice. Thank you so much for reminding us why we fight for change. And, you know, thank you for reminding me why I do this podcast. It's so necessary to get that reminder, you know, with everything going on, it's just great to have that reminder to keep fighting for what you believe in. And that's what you left us off with here. So thank you so much. You're so wise, so strong. And I really appreciate you and everything you do. I really do. Thank you for being on the podcast. And thank you all for listening to Less Panic, More Peace. I really hope that you can donate to the foundation that will be linked below in the description. So please do so. And thank you so much for listening. New episodes every week. Peace out.
Bye.